Live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas,
it's Cofield and Company.
5 o'clock hours here. John Von Tobel is hanging out at Circa at Stadium Swim. Get on down there this weekend. The Fight House with two big fight cards. Canelo and Berlanga going at it at T-Mobile. You can watch the fight on 143-foot screen at Stadium Swim and UFC 306. Also going down on Saturday night. Both Saturday night cards right here in town, and a great place to watch it is, of course, Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas. John, we're going to get more reaction here on the Pac-2, trying to expand with four Mountain West Conference teams, and then we'll see what happens from there. And a lot of the hardcores, it's mostly hardcores who are reacting, you know, the hardcores who are reacting today on social media. You know, it was interesting. People were thirsting for information. I could see that. And there's not a whole lot of information out there. And I got to point out a couple of things, because people get really annoyed with sometimes a lack of UNLV coverage from the papers. I'm going to go back to what I've been saying all show long, John, right? The four schools who got chosen by the Pac-2, all four schools have a football history that suggests fans come to the games. Fans follow them on social media. And I can't speak for the local papers here, but I've seen the coverage of UNLV kind of plateau, sometimes go backwards. To my knowledge, newspapers pick what they're going to cover based on traffic. Mm-hmm. So it's another way that you can make a difference as a fan, but if you don't go and read the coverage that is there, then why would they cover you?
Of course. Pretty simple equation. I'm surprised that people are surprised.
And I tweeted almost nothing today. And I saw a couple people who were like, the radio station doesn't cover UNLV football. No, we cover UNLV football. They're on
probably,
here.
Probably cover UNLV football more than anybody.
I want people – yeah, exactly. I want people to come to the realization, on a day like today, Twitter doesn't pay me to give my takes throughout the day. You know who pays me? Lotus Broadcasting.
That's right.
And so when I come on at 3 o'clock, that's when the takes are coming. I just want to explain to people, like – Twitter is a cool place to have some conversations. I'm not, you know, whatever, popping off on before I get on the air. Sorry.
No, Steve. Twitter is the only space that exists.
No, it's not, and I'm not even sure that it's that significant anymore. But after all that, make sure you check UNLV All Access for coverage on Twitter. At Steve Cofield, at Caleb Herring _ at Matt Neverett. So we have a lot of stuff up there, and you can go to the Learfield podcast page, and we've got interviews up there. And if you missed the Barry Odom radio show, the archive is up there and on LV Sports Network as well. We're going to talk to Dan Wolkin here in a couple minutes, USA Today writer who covers a lot of college football. He had a strong take, so we'll talk to him in about 3 minutes. I do think it's interesting the mood of the hardcore UNLV fans as they go into a game against Kansas. I think there was some pressure already. Hey, you get a chance at another Power 5, Power 4, whatever it's called now, whatever it's going to be called. You need to take them out, and especially on the road, this is a chance for a real good win. I do think this statement, though, is an overstatement. And, again, I'm going to go back to a lot of the resume has been built, or lack there of a resume, has been built over the years. Someone tweeted out, every single UNLV football game this year now got exponentially more important. A dream season might take us to new heights. The stakes literally could not be higher. Now, I don't believe that, John, a 3-9 season will help the cause. Another good season will aid a little bit. But there are so many factors that go into this conference realignment. One or two good football seasons doesn't make or pave the highway completely.
No, it's funny because I saw the same sentiment right now. It's like Texas State's playing Arizona State. Yeah. There's a lot of that going on. Like, wonder what Texas State's going to bust out today with a lot of people watching. It's like, I don't think that's going to make a difference.
This is a win and get in.
Yeah.
They're not.
Now, that would be kind of cool, though.
That would be.
If the Pac-12 came out and was like, hey, look, tell you what, of all the teams that are still in the Mountain West, it's kind of like, you remember in Batman where the Joker snaps a pool stick in half and throws it on the ground. He's like, we're having tryouts. You win the Mountain West, you're in. Let's go.
Could be interesting.
Could be down.
Everything's on the line. John Wilner, who covers the Pac-12, was talking about a long-time media guy who covered the Pac-12 as it used to exist. It's now a Pac-2 with four Mountain West Conference schools invited. He had six possibilities ranked. He had one Memphis, two UTSA, three UNLV, four Tulane, five Air Force. But everything I've seen on Air Force is Air Force, because of NIL, probably would not be part of trying to, you know, rebirth a Power 5 conference, that the AAC would be more of a possibility with other academies there, and then New Mexico in the six hole. What does this mean? I don't know. I don't know if Wilner actually talked to people with the Pac-12. I think right now there's a lot of guessing going on. So I would take a lot of it with a grain of salt. And if you follow certain influencers on social media, some have been right with some of the conference realignment. Many have been completely wrong. So do not buy into people who claim they have sources. There's a lot to be decided here, John.
Of course. Dude, I am not. I would not sell on the fact that in whatever time span we see, by the way, Cal and Stanford are, they're back. They're back at the Pac-12.
Yeah, I don't think they're coming back either.
Right, but I'm saying, like, I wouldn't. Are you gonna right now say no shot? They're coming back. It's still in the realm of possibilities. They're not getting their full cuts out there in the ACC as part of the deal going out there and joining them.
Well, they've also signed a pretty serious agreement. I mean, Clemson and Florida State, I think, have been trying to bail for a couple of years here. There's serious financial ramifications. At this point, if you're a conference and you allow new people in, if you don't have an ironclad, hey, you want to leave, we are going to obliterate you money-wise.
Sure.
If you don't set that up now, then shame on you. I mean, we've seen, you know, exit fees that were too easy allow schools to walk. It cannot happen now.
Of course, but we did. I mean, Steve, but we just watched it. We just watched a conference in the Pac-2 sign up with a scheduling agreement with a clause that said, if you try to take our guys, then guess what? There's going to be a big penalty. And they were like, no. Like, we're going to sign this deal, and we're going to negotiate in good faith to do another year with you guys. And then we got the news last night that they've actually poached all these folks. And they're going to take the monetary fee on the chin. Like, okay.
Let's get more on the story from Dan Wolkin, USA Today. Dan, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, what's up?
Sorry to make you wait there. Well, you wrote a pretty scathing column just about, and you know, some of it concerned loyalty, and also you questioned what the Pac-2 is trying to do and what the four schools from the Mountain West actually accomplished by moving into what could be a new Pac-12.
Yeah, look, I've been thinking about this for many, many years as it relates to realignment and the fact that schools will pay millions and millions and millions of dollars to get out of a situation, to go to a new situation, based on the hope that they're going to make more money. And, you know, in some cases, maybe that's accurate. And in this case, maybe the schools that left the Mountain West to go to the new Pac-12 are going to make a little bit more money. It's not going to be a crazy amount more, because what the new Pac-12 is building is going to be a mid-major conference. It's not going to be a power conference. Period. Point blank. End of story. So I just sort of question why. Why are they doing it? Why are they devoting so much money to getting out of the Mountain West to go to a conference that at the end of the day is going to kind of look a lot like the Mountain West? And that's just where I stand on it.
It's kind of where I was thinking, which is, like, Dan, to your point about the money, couldn't these programs that are leaving the Mountain West actually kind of band together and say, no, let's force their hand and let's just make this Mountain West conference bigger and better, and maybe our media rights deals are going to get better and we're going to get more money instead of having to use all of this cash to go and make the jump? I'm just surprised that they didn't want to go that route. What is so appealing about going the route of joining the Pac-12? Is it just the brand?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of the branding and just sort of the sense of, you get a clean slate. You know, you go to the Pac-12, it's the branding of the Pac-12, but it doesn't really exist as a conference. So you're joining Oregon State and Washington State, and you're then picking and choosing who you want to be affiliated with in your conference. It's worth remembering that, you know, the old Mountain West, the original Mountain West, never or hasn't existed in many years. The original Mountain West was a league with BYU, it was a league with Utah, just as an example, and then, you know, that got chipped away. And in order to backfill from all the schools that the Mountain West lost, they had to add, you know, Utah State, they had to add Fresno State, they had to add San Jose State. schools that, frankly, a lot of the original Mountain West members wanted to leave behind when they left the WAC. And we're talking about, you know, now we're talking about 25 years ago.
Yep.
This is a long time ago when all this stuff happened. But there's a lot of elitism. There's a lot of snobbery that goes on in these conference realignment discussions. And I think for the schools that decided to join the Pac-12, there's just this sense, all right, we're going to start over. We're going to be able to cut the quote-unquote dead weight that we had to support in the Mountain West, and we can pick and choose who we want to be with to form a conference that is, you know, in our minds, the best of the non-power leagues. And whether they do it or not, I don't know. Good for them. Good luck with everything you're trying to do here. I just don't think financially it's going to make that much of a difference, and it's certainly not going to make a difference in terms of access to the college football playoff.
Dan Wolkin from USA Today's Evel Cofield and Company. Let's go back to what you said about 3 minutes ago, that it'll be a Group of Five conference. I mean, do you think these four schools that are joining Oregon State and Washington State believe that a new Pac-12 is going to get an auto bid, one of the what was going to be five spots into the college football tournament?
Well, if they believe that, then they're extremely stupid. I mean, I just don't know any other way to say it. The SEC and the Big Ten and the Big 12 and the ACC, they're not going to let this Pac-12 get an automatic bid for its champion of the college football playoff. They're not going to let it happen. That, to me, that's not the reason you do this. If that is the reason you do this, you're delusional.
And Stanford and Cal are not going back. There's reasons they left, and I do believe Stanford was one of the, you know, snobbish schools that – frankly, wasn't that happy that some of the Pac-12 schools were in the Pac-12. They're not going back to a conference that is, frankly, lesser than the ACC to go with schools that don't match them from a mission and academic standpoint.
Yeah, it's not even worth talking about. Cal and Stanford are not going back to this league. They're in the ACC at least until the ACC blows up, whatever that looks like, whenever that happens. If there's a day when Clemson and Florida State leave the ACC, and then they're followed out the door by Virginia, North Carolina, and whoever else, yeah, maybe at that point Stanford and Cal have to look for some other situation that makes more sense for them, but it's certainly not right now, and I don't think it's going to be anytime soon.
So what does this mean for the Mountain West? Because we were kind of talking about, right, how because with everything that happened to the Pac-2 was sitting on that money, so they're going to use that to get these teams for the Mountain West. And then let's say UNLV leaves as well, and maybe one or two more programs leave the Mountain West. They'll be sitting on some money because of this deal, but, like, what did they do? Because I think, Dan, one of the interesting things is we've also seen reshuffling at some of these lesser leagues, like Conference USA moving around and whatnot. Like, how does the Mountain West pick up the pieces?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're probably looking in terms of their – first option is trying to backfill. You know, you get New Mexico State, you get UTEP from Conference USA, you know, maybe Sam Houston State, you know, maybe you convince North Dakota State to jump from FCS to FBS. I mean, let's be real, there's not a lot of great options for the Mountain West at this point, but there's some schools they could probably convince to join their league, and I imagine that's what will happen. Now, the other end of that is, you know, how many more do they lose? My read on the situation from the Pac-12 standpoint, they're definitely going to have to add two more schools, and they're probably going to add a couple more than that. They're going to be selective, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be from the Mountain West. They could be trying to get a Tulane, a Memphis, Texas San Antonio, somebody like that. But if that doesn't work out, then maybe they go back and say, all right, UNLV in Nevada and New Mexico, you're coming with us. And at that point, you know, is the Mountain West even viable? I don't know. So there's a lot of unanswered questions about how this is all going to play out. But there's not a lot of great options for the Mountain West, that's for sure.
Should UNLV, you know, be thirsty for the Pac-12?
Well, from my understanding, because I think it's obvious that UNLV would be a attractive candidate for this new Pac-12, but I think they have a bit of a political issue with their tie to Nevada Reno, and you know, can they leave the Mountain West for the Pac-12 without Reno? And I don't know. Like, I think initially, in the short period of time in which this deal all went down, they probably had some issues making that jump. Over the longer course of time, as this gets debated and discussed, could they do it alone? I wouldn't necessarily count that possibility out, but you know, probably there's some political forces in the state of Nevada that want them to be a package deal. You know, I'm not intimately involved in that, so I don't know exactly how that's going to turn out. But to me, if you're going to reform the Pac-12 and be sort of a West Coast-based league that touts itself as the preeminent, you know, anchor of West Coast college sports, to not have UNLV in that league when you have San Diego State and Boise just seems kind of crazy.
I'm going to go back again to something you said. We were talking about, especially San Diego State, and actually we didn't even talk about it, but whatever. I'm referencing something from earlier in the show with Audrey, but Dan Wilkins with us. But I was mentioning this earlier. I think it's going to be something really fascinating to follow with California politics and the seriousness of the California education system. There was an issue in the university system with Cal and UCLA, and now UCLA is paying part of the Big Ten money to Cal. I've seen people around San Diego State over the last 6 years who were like, this is a state institution. What is going on with all these payouts, this, that, more, you know, just for the athletics program? I wonder how easy it is going to be for Fresno State and San Diego State to go, hey, everybody, on the state level, state university system, yep, we're gonna be paying like $40 million to go into this new league. I think they're going to get pushback.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point, and it's certainly a question mark for me. And, yeah, where does that leave, for instance, San Jose State?
Yep.
You know, that they're part of the same system, and they've been in the Mountain West for several years, and so are they just going to get, you know, left behind? Like, I don't really know. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people in the state legislature who have questions about that, as they should. But at the same time, I've been doing this for 20 years, and we talk about these political considerations, and at least in my time covering college sports, I've never seen a legislature shut down a conference realignment move. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing what's been happening here with realignment over the years. Clearly, basketball has no power, because I was kind of laughing to myself when you were talking about Sam Houston State. That'll be a big draw at the Thomas and Mack, where they've got 17,000 seats and people are complaining about playing better teams. And my God, Sam Houston State could be an opponent. Let's go ahead to close here. Let's go to, like, 2031 could be the next, you know, big deal. I think that's when a lot of the TV deals, then when you start to look at it again, college football playoff, all that stuff. Is what's more likely? That we actually have these conferences for college football, or is there going to be some combination, a big 40, 50, or 60, where, hey, the schools that the SEC and the Big Ten want to add, that's going to make the mega level of college football?
Okay, so you're asking me about something 7 years away, which 7 years in college sports is basically like a lifetime, and it's impossible to project out that far.
Yeah.
I have said for probably, I don't know, the last 4 or 5 years, that it's definitely seemed to me like we're heading toward a super conference or a super league system where the top 30 to 40 college football programs just kind of like break away and do their own thing. And in some ways that might actually be healthy for the entire ecosystem of college sports. But the question would just be, how does it affect college basketball, the NCAA tournament, and all the other stuff that goes along with it, and all the other sports? I mean, look, if I were just to be the czar of everything right now, that's probably what I would do. It just say, all right, you know, let's be real about this. Ohio State and Georgia and Tennessee and Texas, like, you're not the same as everybody else. So we're just going to put you over here. We're going to let you kind of do your own thing for football. And then for every other sport, we're going to make this as regional and as, like, tight as possible. And it doesn't really matter. Like, you're in Southern California, most of your schedule is going to be Southern California schools. You know, you're in Texas, most of your schedule is going to be Texas schools. Like, it would save on travel costs, it would make a lot more sense logistically, and that would just be a better system, in my opinion, than what we have now. Now, do we get there in one fell swoop? No, it's never that clean and easy. It's always piecemeal. It's always comes with these ridiculous complications and these conference alignments that don't make any sense and spread thousands of miles and cause, you know, schools to send their volleyball team three time zones away. And it stinks. All of it stinks, right? But I would hope that when you talk about 7 years down the road, we would have a system that treats football differently, puts it in a separate category, lets the true big boys do what they need to do, and then returns the rest of college sports to some alignment that at least makes geographic and financial sense. That's my hope.
Yeah.
Is that going to be the reality? I have no idea.
Probably not. And if they have this mega conference, I wonder who's going to fall by the wayside. I mean, we could wake up, you know, 7 years from now, and all of a sudden Colorado, Iowa State, Northwestern, Vanderbilt are like, wait, what the hell just happened? We're not part of the crew anymore?
Well, they can still play good football and compete amongst themselves, and people still watch.
Oh yeah, no, there'll be a market for if there's a top 50 and then a second 50. The second 50 will do fine. They'll have TV deals, and there'll be a market for all that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Vanderbilt is competing for a national championship now.
Right. Might be better off. All right, Dan. Well, we appreciate the late spot from you. Thanks for checking in, and we enjoyed the column today. We enjoy your coverage. Thank you so much.
Sounds good. Anytime. Thanks.
There he is, Dan Wolkin, USA Today. John?
Yes.
I want predictions for 2031.
Seems aggressive.
I was being aggressive. I don't know if I'm going to be here in 2031, so I'm not, who knows if it'll even matter.
I mean, are we going to be a society in 2031?
Those are some deep thoughts as well, right? If you listen to a lot of people right now with an election coming up, you know, there's never been a worse time in the history of humanity. We're headed towards hell. I've left you stunned.
Oh, sorry. That sounded like you were going to break, so I thought was like a Cofield-like pause to go to break.
No. There's really no way to react to that. You
they're
just
eating
chuckle.
The dogs. That's what I was going to say.
coming up, we got Fight Weekend, the Fight House at Circa, Stadium Swim. You can watch both the UFC card over at the Sphere, but you watch it at Stadium Swim. Also, they're going to have the Canelo fight, so cool prizes, always really good activities. The ladies will be out there at Stadium Swim. So mark it down Saturday night. Great place to watch the fights is at the Circa Fight House.
Former NFL cornerback and Next Level Chef contestant Mark McMillan joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Cofield hanging out in Kansas City getting ready for UNLV at Kansas. Mark McMillan is in the house. What's up, Mark?
Oh, man, I'm just waiting for tomorrow's showdown.
Yeah, what do you think? A lot of the money's coming in on Kansas, expecting a bigger Kansas victory than was initially handicapped. So UNLV's chances in this game, especially off of what we saw in that bowl game?
Like I said, that last year you can't go on what happened last year. You know, some of the players that caused a little ruckus at the end are no longer with the program. This is these guys' second year under Coach Odom, so I expect these guys to go out there and you know, really get after it and punch Kansas in the mouth. Like I said, it's going to be a really tough game. Kansas coming off a tough loss to Illinois last week, so maybe some of those guys will be a little hobbled.
The receivers for Kansas are big, they're fast.
Yes.
The top two guys combined for about 292 yards receiving. What do you do as a defense? Because they retooled the back end. They got bigger guys. They got more experienced guys. What's the biggest key? Is it the defensive backs or is it the pass rush?
You got to get pass rush. You can't let that quarterback sit back there. He's a mobile quarterback as well. Their receivers are physical. They're big. But the good thing about UNLV, they went out and got some size on the corner that will be able to match up with those guys and play some man-to-man coverage. So you definitely going to have to get after the quarterback whenever you have a mobile quarterback he opposes a little bit of problems for your linebackers because they got to, you know, cover running backs out of the backfield a little longer. So hopefully they've been working on that this week in practice.
Should be a really interesting environment, too, because while Houston Stadium is a lot bigger than the soccer stadium that they're going to be playing in Kansas City, this one's going to be full. So it's going to be 20,000 seats, 18,000 seats. It's going to be raucous. And then it's also the Kansas City folks who maybe don't want to trek out to Lawrence, which isn't that far. But now they've got Kansas for another game here, and it's close to home. So I think the vibe there is going to be insane.
Oh, it's going to be great. And this is why you come to UNLV or you go to Texas or the Alabamas to play in big-time games like this on the road in a hostile environment. They have a veteran guys on the defense side of the ball for UNLV, so they're not going to be shy away from that. You know, you can go back to the Air Force game last year. That was a tough environment to play in, and they came out with the W. It's going to be exciting, man. I know my guy, World Series MVP, Jermaine Dye. We've been texting. So both of his boys actually play on Kansas that I coach in the bowl game. So I'm excited to see those guys get after it.
Oh, that's cool. Very cool. Small world, the football world is. All right, let's turn our attention to the NFL and let's get some reaction first on the Raiders and that game against the Chargers, which the game was close, but then they kind of gassed out at the end when Harbaugh ball got going and they were able to run the ball real well. There's been a lot of talk about the issues on the sidelines, Mark, and, you know, Antonio Pierce has got to get it together pretty quickly here. You didn't like the coaching effort across the board with the Raiders versus the Chargers staff?
Yeah, you can tell. You know, experience really pulled that one out. The Chargers are still building their roster. You know, they got some young guys over there. Obviously, their defense is always going to be solid with Bosa and Mack, you know, who played big-time performances in that game. But the body language from the offensive side of the ball was really troubling. Just so much power on the offensive side of the ball with the receivers that they will be able to, you know, move the ball a lot more than they did. You know, just like I said, they completely got out-coached. And that's what Harbaugh does, man. He just sticks around, hangs around long enough, and then he lets his running game just pound you. And the defense played lights out. There's nothing else you can ask for these defensive guys to do. You know, I think they were like 0-for on third down. Like they really got after it.
Hey Mark, you know, let's put you on hold here real quick. Let's get you on the phone. We're trying to do video, but we're getting some feedback here, so we'll have Mark dial in and we'll get him hooked up, Griffin. John, I haven't had a chance to talk to you about the Chargers game with the Raiders. So first of all, you know, obviously this show is very big on, and I don't want to call it analytics, because it's not accurate, you know, when you go for it on fourth down, when you don't, when you punt. What'd you make of what Antonio Pierce did? Because when the numbers came down, people are talking about the percentages on that move. It just he was not greeted with much positivity, like none.
I think it's pretty clear. Like, you can't punt in that situation. And I think what makes that worse is obviously it's a horrendous decision regardless, right? But what makes it worse is also the little things we've seen from him from a game management decision throughout the preseason, which obviously that Vikings game comes to mind, the way they managed the end of that. That was a little bit of a problem as well. And I think that is magnified, right? It's still a terrible decision, but it's magnified by the fact that you've now made multiple bad decisions and have shown no steps toward growing away from those issues.
We got Mark McMillan back with us. Mark, let's talk about, you know, the other problem when I mentioned the defense kind of gassed out against the run. Well, they had to do a lot of work because the offense, frankly, didn't make many big plays, couldn't push it down the field, and the run game for the Raiders wasn't very good. So how can this offense get better? I mean, if they play like that in a lot of games, they're not going to win a lot of games with that offense.
They're not going to win a lot of games, like you said, but it was just embarrassing, as you know, and it goes back to preseason. You know, none of these guys really got any reps. None of these guys really played with each other, so they're still out there trying to figure things out. And you just can't just tee it up in week one and then, you know, just say, let's go out there and let's get after it. So, man, they got whipped up front. And, you know, the offensive line has always been an issue. The running game was non-existent. So maybe I'll suit up. Maybe I can come out there with some pass, man, and get some yardage.
Well, I thought that was one of the stats that came out of it, Mark, was like the corners and how well they had done in that game. But I thought that was more of a symptom of like, yeah, why are we going to throw against you? We're pushing you all over the place.
Yeah, but like I said, their defense played really good. Nate Hobbs played well. You know, Jack Jones, even the addition of Darnay Holmes, you know, he just got here, but he was under Graham's system in New York. So they did well enough on defense, man. And I would be pissed if we play that well, and then we can't get any points, and it's only week one, but they didn't look good at all in week one on the offensive side of the ball.
So how bad does it get in the next week? Because you're pretty beat up at the defensive end position now as you head into this matchup with Baltimore. You gave up quite a few yards per carry on the ground against the Raiders, and you're probably going to face that again here against the Ravens on the road. So what do you expect from this front seven now against the Ravens?
I'm expecting Derrick Henry to be licking his chops. I'm expecting Lamar Jackson to be like, yo, look at this. Look at all these openings that we have an opportunity to capitalize on. You know, they had a nice little rest that they have since playing the Chiefs. So, like I said, the Raiders' D-line is – I don't even like saying this guy's name, but I think he's back on the injured list. I don't even want to give him credit. But, like I said, they got somebody in free agent, so hopefully – they can get it done. But it's a tough place to play down there in Baltimore.
The former Eagle, Saint, Redskin, Niner, Chief. Did I hear you pull out a we for the Raiders? I'm not sure you can do that.
We? Did I say we? Oh, you got to blank that out. We're going to dump it. You got to mute that out, man. I don't know what I was thinking, but for all my Kansas City people out there, I did not say it. I did not say it. Even the Eagle fans, they're like, yo, what are you doing? So I did not say it.
You were doing a collective Las Vegas Raiders thing.
The Las Vegas Raiders.
There you go.
That's right.
Hey, did you see Devontae Adams in pumping up the opponent, talking about Lamar Jackson, saying that Jackson, quote, is the best ball carrier ever, regardless of position? I would make the argument, and I think Lamar Jackson is awesome. He's an awesome running quarterback. He's a good quarterback. I don't know that he's the best running quarterback ever. I mean, the best ball carrier ever, he's good, but come on.
Yeah, he was stretching on that. Why would he even say that? You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm on the defensive side of the ball, I'm like, yo, bro, we're not going to be gassing another player up. You know what I'm saying? I know you may be boys in the offseason, but, man, like I said, our mentality in Philly, man, would have been like, bleep Jackson.
Yeah.
You know, I can't say on the radio, but we'd have been like, mother Jackson, man. We don't care about those Lamar Jackson. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're about to bust his head out. You know, we're about to hit him to the white meat bleed.
I mean, you can't blame him. His quarterbacks are Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. He is probably so upset that he's in this position right now.
Yeah, but you just can't say that, especially with the stuff that's going on, you know, behind the scenes with Devontae, people saying he's not happy, you know, other players throwing him under the bus. You can't gas up another quarterback. I don't know what – maybe Lamar might be like, yo, man, we'll get you over here in Baltimore if things don't really work out.
Yeah, doubtful anytime soon. What's going on the charitable front with the Nathan Adelson Hospice and your pizza?
Oh, it's going great, man. I was actually the MC for the event last week. The Raiders band actually was the highlight of the show, which meant that band is amazing. You know, I know we go to the games, we kind of take it for granted, but, man, the band did really well. They raised a lot of money for the Nathan Adelson Hospice Care Center. I know the pizza is doing good, the Grilla McMillan barbecue chicken pizza. So that's for the whole month of September, man. It's doing really good. So we're excited about everything that's going on, man. And the money will go back to the foundation to help them out as well.
Did you see, and listen, you guys all have a swagger, and wide receivers against DBs, you got to have some swagger. Did you see the Bengals cornerback Cam Taylor-Britt talking about Xavier Worthy? He said, speed, that's about it. He can run straight, jet sweeps, run straight, but he can't do much else. Is that just healthy trash talk, or are they asking for it?
Oh no, that's healthy trash talk, man. That's actually rated. That's like Disney talk. That's like really nice, man. Just some of the stuff that should be coming out of these guys' mouths should be a little bit more explicit than like, hey, you know, speed or whatever. It should be like, man, this mother bleep bleep is whack. He's terrible. He's trash. His routes are garbage. Some of the stuff me and Eric Allen used to say to Desmond Howard when he came out. Obviously, he won a Super Bowl, MVP. All that good stuff. But, man, we were really getting after Desmond Howard in his rookie year. And it wasn't like, oh, your routes are terrible. It was like, man, your routes are trash.
So I wanted to go to college. I was curious your thoughts. Notre Dame obviously falls flat on their face in a really big spot. What'd you make of that? Is that just college kids fat and happy after a big win? Like, that's insane.
Man, that's a big win for that program. But, you know, they've had big wins before. Obviously, this is the biggest win in their program, and the athletic director's name is Sean Frazier. He's actually an Alabama teammate with mine. So, you know, during the week, he was just texting me. He was like, Lil Mac, we ready for him. I don't think they're ready. You know, they were a little excited about beating Texas A&M. They were feeling themselves. And, man, he's got that New York. He's from New York, too, so he's got that New York mentality. And he was like, Little Mac, I don't think they're ready for what's about to hit them. And look what happened. They go out and beat them, man. So, man, it was exciting to see the coach. Man, he had snot bubbles coming out of his eyes, out of his nose after the interview. Man, it was great to see. But I know a lot of talk has said Freeman is not the guy in Notre Dame. He can't get over that hump in Notre Dame. So, you know, the guys are really coming after him.
Yeah, I think Freeman's fine.
I don't know about if he's fine.
No, I think he's fine. I agree with Matt with Mark. I think they were fat and happy coming out of the game and overlooked NIU. I think this will be the impetus to get them going in the right direction. And I was actually surprised, John, that you were talking about the change of quarterback. Well, it might be necessary, but I don't know. When Brad Powers brought up Steve Angeli, all right.
Right. Leonard can't throw the ball downfield.
They
cannot throw the ball downfield. They didn't even throw the ball downfield against Texas A&M. So
yes.
It's 2 weeks in a row. You would think that when you schedule Northern Iowa, Illinois, it's almost the same competition. But, you would think that you would go out there and just smack them in the mouth, especially at home. You go out there, and I don't even think the leprechaun showed up. I didn't even see him out there.
We saw Penn State scuffle with Bowling Green, right? But the difference was Penn State ultimately won that game. We saw Kansas State screw around as well. They came back, they won that game. Like, slow starts are fine, but like to what we're talking about, Riley Leonard, you look at the numbers back at Duke, he can't throw the ball downfield. He's a great athlete, but their passing game struggles when he's going to be out there, and I think that's why if they make a quarterback change, it might be a small upgrade. You could do more with your passing attack.
Damn.
They definitely need to make an upgrade in the quarterback. Like I said, sometimes these transfers, man, everybody thinks they're about to hit the golden transfer. You know, you look at DJ over there at Florida State. You look at the young guy over from Oklahoma who transferred to Oregon. These guys are just looking average, but they're making a lot of money.
Hey, Mark might appreciate this. When you heard about Riley Leonard after he left Duke, was like, good athlete, he's a gamer. When I hear you're a gamer, you're trying to find nice qualities about a guy that doesn't really have anything that he should as a quarterback.
Yeah, what is a gamer? What is a gamer? When I think gamer, I'm thinking like a guy playing some video games and sitting in front of his computer for like 18, 19 hours while his mom is over there just passing potato chips under the door to feed him. A gamer?
Mark McMillan is with us. This spot is brought to you by Once Upon a Coconut and Grilla Grills. Let's close out with your Tide. I got to say, and it goes back to Saban days, because I have no idea how Kalen DeBoer is going to schedule in the future, but the fact that Bama is on the road in dangerous spots in terms of the crowd, it's going to be a vibe. What do you think? Do they just roll this week, or could they be a little bit sluggish and have the crowd affect them?
No, I don't think they'll be sluggish. Like I said, Jalen Milroe is a professional, man. He's been in big-time games. Obviously, it's going to be a hostile environment. I don't think we ever went down there to Madison, Wisconsin. So it's going to be a different environment. But, man, you play in the SEC, so these environments are not going to affect these guys. I noticed the Tide got off to a slow start, and the fans were already calling for his head already. We're like, dude, we're up by like 50, and they were upset.
Mark, what do you made of the supposed struggles of the young secondary for Alabama? You think those are something that will stick around?
No, those guys will get better. Like I said, when you're playing true freshmen and guys – straight out of high school, you're going to have those growing pains. And even if you go back to Saban days, man, those guys were playing at true freshmen, and they were giving up some passes, earlier during the season. But toward the end, those guys are figured out, man. Like I said, they got some really talented guys over there in that secondary. So hopefully they can get it together. But the good thing about it, the playoff has expanded. So we go get in some way or another.
Mark, to close, how was your party last week, your appearance last week at Santa Fe?
Oh, man, it went great, man. The people came out. The casino was packed. Obviously, with a lot of football going on, man, I've never really been in the sports book, but, man, the sports book over at the casino was packed. Brett did a really good job, man. The pizza was flying off the grill. The wings were delicious. He raised a good amount of money. A couple of people won signed McMillan Eagles jerseys, not Raiders jerseys, Eagles jerseys.
Yeah.
So... I'm excited about that, man. Me and Brett will do some more work, some more charity work as well. So, go Birds.
Yeah, that was at Stallone's, which is the Italian joint now over at the Santa Fe.
And you told me about the sandwich. I got the sandwich.
You got the Big Guido?
Oh my gosh, man! I feel like I was from Italy, man. I feel like I'm from South Philly.
There you go. All right, Mark. Have a good weekend. Good luck to your Tide. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, appreciate it, fellas. Safe travels.
We're gonna go to break. I want your answer on this one, John. What are the UNLV quarterbacks? Let's talk about the starter on the way back. Is Matt Sluka a difference maker? Is he going to show out on Friday night, or is he going to be labeled what you said is not a label you want? The gamer.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
All right, closing things out here to Thursday. We'll get John's answer on Matt Sluka. Remember, John Von Tobel on Sunday morning is going to be found at Westgate in the Superbook, 8 to 9. He'll be there 8 to 10, but 8 to 9 with the show with last-minute injury updates, line moves with John Von Tobel's. Let's get it right. JVT Sunday Football Preview Show. John Murray from the book will be on as well. How was last week?
I was great. You know, I was like meeting folks. So, you know, we had a lot of people come up, say hi, listeners of the Sunday show for a long time, you know, coming by and saying what's up. Obviously, a lot of people like to go down to the Westgate on Sundays too. So it was a ton of fun. I always like meeting people and talk to them, even if some of them talk a little smack, you know. It's always fun to meet some folks.
Always, yeah. If you give out your play of the week and you lose, you're going to hear about it.
Oh, yeah. Trust me. Well, so I got asked it, and my play of the week this last Sunday was the Titans. So I completely deserved it, but yeah. It's going to go down as the loss, so you do wonder how much you're going to get flack for.
UNLV quarterback Matt Sluka. You I think you insulted Riley Leonard, the Notre Dame quarterback, calling him a gamer.
Sure.
Sluka?
I mean, yeah, I think he is. But here's the thing. Sluka's not playing for a team that is, right, perennially nationally ranked and considers himself a contender for a national championship year in and year out. And is a brand like Notre Dame. So if you're a program like that, you shouldn't be going to get gamers. You should be going to get guys who are going to lead you to the next level and win a college football championship.
Yeah.
You know, a program like UNLV and where they're at, gamers work perfectly fine in good systems, and I think that's what they have. I mean, I keep going back to, because people keep asking me about this game, obviously, and you keep hearing the bowl game getting brought up, and you're the sideline guy, so I'll acquiesce to you on this, but I think Sluka provides a different angle that Jaden Maiava did not for this offense. He is a better athlete. He can get the edge. He can create explosiveness with his legs. If you look at some of the statistics, in terms of designed runs, he's already almost matched the total of designed runs that Jaden Maiava had all year last year. Yeah. That's a completely different aspect.
Well, he's not a better passer right now than Maiava, but I think he can throw every ball. But in this game, what they need as much as anything is ball control and the run game to churn it out. And his ability to go basically on his own on design runs or scrambles to get first downs, and especially, you know, early, get a second down, first down, is gigantic. I don't – even though Kansas has a new OC, we think Daniels is healthy. I mean, Justin Bean was playing some good football last year.
Yep.
I don't believe UNLV, even though it is a high-scoring offense and a high-scoring team going back to last year – a shootout is not the goal here.
Well, I don't think it will. I think it'll be a low. I actually think it'd be. I'd be rather play the under. You know what I mean? Because I do think that both teams are going to go with that mentality. And like I think, again, it's two games. But look what Houston did with Oklahoma, right? Like, and what UNLV did by comparison, they were in control of that entire game against Houston. So, like, I've liked what I've seen on the back end defensively with some of the additions they've made in the transfer portal. I think some of the big issues for the secondary down the stretch of last season was giving up those big plays, and I don't think they're going to be there as often. So we'll see, but I think they're going to be able to stay inside of that number for sure.
Great spot to watch the game is our friends with Oasis Bar and Grill. You know, looking around town with this DirecTV ESPN battle, you don't know if you're going to get the game in a lot of places. So go check them out if you're on that or in that part of town, Decatur, just south of Trop. Oasis is a great option on Friday night to watch the game. I'm excited about it. I think the Rebels can pull the upset, but a lot of it's going to come back to that retooled back end of the defense, John. Yeah. Obviously, they cannot give up deep shots. They actually had a blown coverage against Utah Tech. They got to be a lot better, and they'll have a shot in this game.
Saw a lot of, like, can't do that. We should probably pump the brakes on this UNLV team, and then they ended up destroying them. I was like, hey, let's relax, guys.
I mean, it's one shot that worked, and they shorted up after that. And
yes.
Boy, you know, Deacon Hill's a dangerous guy, man. 6'3 and 275 pounds of quarterback, a righty, hefty lefty. I guess that doesn't work, but I said it last week. Rest in peace, Jared Lorenzen. This guy's, like, the closest thing I've seen since him. So tomorrow, right at 3 o'clock, pregame, and then kickoff at 4. Griffin, good job today. John, thanks for doing the show. Thanks to Circa for housing the show. We'll see you.